I'm Mike Lubega, MSNBC and MLB.com.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN, and we welcome you to the Friday morning edition of the Sports Reporters podcast, minus our colleague Mitch Albom. We'll be back with you next week. Michael and I, we've managed to carry on a conversation for about 48 years, and you're going to hear an extension of it this morning. And, Michael, we're going to start off as follows. The Red Sox win. The Red Sox win. The Red Sox won, Mike. They're going to the World Series. And, you know, it's a good thing because this town is so starved for a winner.
Oh, my God.
And you know, how many months has it been since we've had a championship game? So thank God we're going to have, you know, a chance to play for another championship, Mike.
Who would have thought that someday the big bad city, New York City, would have this kind of sports envy about the city of Boston, who had a team that looked like it was going to win another Super Bowl last year, that had a team that was nearly good enough to go to the NBA Finals last year. And Bob, this is now four World Series appearances in the last 15 years. They have clearly become the dominant organization. It's bizarre world in baseball because the Yankees have played and won one World Series in the last 16 years, okay? And so here are the rest. So this series that they just played was so rich, Bob. And I tweeted this out last night, and sometimes the numbers are right. Sometimes you are what your record says you are, as Mr. Parcells said, okay? They were a lot better than everybody during the regular season, and so far they have been a lot better than even the Houston Astros in the playoffs. They have now beaten a combined 203 regular season victories to get to the World Series. And Bob, the team that started 17-2 in March and April is now 7-2 in October.
Yes, and undefeated on the road thus far in the short sampling of the playoffs. And the question that we had about them was the pitching, overall status, the precariousness of the pitching. And the one great hope was that they managed Alex Cora and his pitching coach and management, I'm sure, too, spent the whole summer gearing Chris Sale up for October.
Yep.
And Chris Sale was not exactly a prominent part of what's been going on lately.
Four innings in five games, Bob. They end up throwing the Astros down a flight of stairs anyway.
I know it. And then, of course, there has been so much written and said about David Price. And David Price last night, you know, finally came through. Now, it's already, this is to show you what the level of cynicism is in this town. Already, I'm listening on talk radio this morning that, well, you know, there was really no pressure in that game. Because it was a throwaway game. Because if they lost, they were coming back home for 6-7. So it figures that this is the game that he would come up big. You know, this is what he has to deal with. I mean, you know, and I'm sorry to say that. But it was a very curious performance by him and Michael last night in the incredible reliance on the changeup.
Yep. Yep, fastballs and changeups, Bob. As they used to say a long time ago, when John Tudor was pitching, an ex-Red Sox pitching so well for the Cardinals, he inned and outed them, mm-hmm. and they never could catch up with him. And Bob, we talk about this all the time, and we talked about it a few days ago. And I always make the distinction, you know, for as long as we've been friends in this business, okay? Yes, there's a difference between real character and athletic character. But athletic character is real, okay? And Price's athletic character showed up last night. It's the beauty of sports. Who was supposed to have everything going for him? Nope. The pitcher for the other team last night, okay? And not only was Price, you know, even people in outer space know that Price's record as a starter was 0-9 in the postseason. And in the biggest night of his life, Robert, he became the star kid that he once was out of the bullpen for the Rays 10 years ago.
Yeah, no kidding. And then the thing is that it's just a springboard. You know, this certainly gives the Red Sox something to hang their hat on as they look forward to whoever they will be playing in the World Series. And that was a big story. But Mike, there's so many. We got to go back to Game 4. it really was an epic game, and there were more defensive moments.
Oh my God!
I mean, here's the thing.
Josh Reddick, Bob. Josh Reddick made what I call the Andy Chavez catch
Chavez.
Because it will be forgotten that he saved the game for his team with the bases loaded in the top of the ninth against Mookie Betts.
Here's the thing: among the many fascinating aspects of that game. And one of the rare times, and anyone you'll ever live to be 100, you might not see this too often, and that is that in the first eight innings, someone scored in either half inning. There was a score in each inning, at least once each inning by someone or the other. And then in the ninth inning, nobody scored, and yet both teams could easily have scored, and both ended with both at bats ended with fantastic catches of the same variety, by the way. Yeah, it was an amazing game. The defense. I mean, where do we, between the catches and the play that Mookie Betts made, which you are not going to see a better textbook play of that nature in your life than he made. And the guy throughout was his childhood friend. I mean, who's writing this stuff, Mike?
Bob, for all the great catches, okay, Benintendi obviously has made a catch that if the Red Sox, especially the Red Sox, go on to win their fourth World Series in 15 years, will go down in legend in Boston and in October legend. Okay, to make a catch like that to end the game, we've seen other October catches, Bob. I've been trying to remember one that ended a game like that, okay? We all the way back to Agee and Swoboda and the Mets in the 1970s, okay? I can't remember one that ended a game. But let me talk to you about three routine outs, okay? Because sometimes when it's your time in sports, it's your time, okay? Gary Sanchez does not hit a home run in Game 4 at Yankee Stadium, a homer happy park, after Kimbrel opened the door wide and asked the Yankees to continue the series, okay? Bregman has Benintendi the other day brushing up against the Green Monster. That ball falls into his glove. And then in the 8-6 game, Brian McCann gets one but doesn't quite get one. And even last night, Bob, look at where Kemp hit that ball to end the game. It didn't go in the Crawford box.
That's a double off the wall in Fenway at the very least. And it also, you want to get to Kimbrel? He's officially a heart attack closer now. There's no question about it. He hasn't solved his problems. It's a major concern as they go into.
Do you think he has been tipping his pitches? Because he's only got really basically two pitches.
Yeah, no, they wonder about the slider. Yeah, what it is with the slider. But no command, no general consistent command anymore.
Pretty good last night, though. Pretty good last night, actually. After he had thrown a million pitches. Let's start here, okay? Because, and I'm going to talk about Alex Cora later, one of my favorite people in baseball for 20 years. In a parting shot, Bob, he sticks with his guys. My son Zach texted me when Kimbrel came out for the ninth after the way Evaldi had been pitching, and he said, "You simply can't second guess Alex Cora at this point in time." The night before, anybody looking from 30,000 feet would have thought, "Wait a minute, you can't get three outs from Kimbrel. Now you're going to get six outs." Mm. But by the time he brought him in last night, I'm thinking to myself, "Okay, if Alex is okay with it, I'm okay with it."
Yeah, in Alex we trust. So add that to the list of coaching icons we've got in this town at the moment. So that's good. And by the way, Nathan Eovaldi was the unsung hero of the playoffs for them.
The ace of this, Bob, you look at the moves that they made, okay, in season. And I include Brazier in this, okay, because he's an in-season move. Kinsler, despite the fact that he did not play his best, has had big hits in October. But Nate Eovaldi has established himself as the ace of this pitching staff. And I had no doubt that he was going to come in and throw 100 miles per hour and would have been completely happy if Alex Cora had sent him out to pitch the ninth inning last night.
Yes, I would have been very happy with it too. That thing just doesn't happen in this world when you got the closer that's supposed to be your guy. And I think they're still trying to get him his mental state stabilized to make sure he's going to get it back. But Eovaldi. Well, not only that, but Steve Pierce It's a very good summer for Dombrowski. And, of course, the big criticism that was, however, over and above that was that he didn't go out and get a reliever. And, so far so good. They're making do with what they have, and they've gotten very good service from these middle, you know, so these bridge guys, so-called. Very, very good service.
Bob, we have not had a chance. We have talked a lot. We're going to talk more about this, and then we'll get to one of the two opponents, the Brewers and the Dodgers. One of them is going to be in the World Series. It's a rule. Okay.
Yeah.
Bob, I thought Joe West made the proper call on the ball that Jose Altuve hit. I looked at it. Okay. And I know that there's some question about whether he was in the stands or above the yellow line and all that stuff. Okay. But if that's not fan interference, then there is no such thing as fan interference.
Well, the way I understand it, once again, we start with this. Joe West, he made a call. Therefore, the adjudication in New York has to be, is there evidence enough to overturn
it? Right.
People have to understand that. He made the call. Had he said no interference and they would have looked at it, then they wouldn't work it from that premise. Okay. The issue is, I guess, is that was the ball over the plane into the stands or not? Because if it wasn't yet in the plane over, into the stands, fans are allowed to go for it. You know, right. As much as I hate this, I despise this. But fans are, it's fair game. But if they reach over and the Jeffrey Mara thing, then it's clear that that's an interference. There's no doubt in my mind, and even thank God, I'm glad to say, in the noble AJ Hinch's mind, that Betts catches the ball if he is not interfered with. He was interfered with. The only question is, where is it, in the stands or was it before the ball? Did the ball break the plane? I thought the ball broke the plane, Mike. I think they caught a break. That's what I think.
So you thought his glove went into across
I think
like the plane of the goal line in football. That's basically what you're talking about.
I'll tell you what. There's in today's New York Times. There's a very good photo. And this accompanying story, that can rekindle it's a great photo of it, but it's impossible to tell from that photo. But you can see the fan reaching. Clearly there was contact with Mookie's glove, even though the fan denies that he's wrong. And Mookie's it's catching that ball, so he was
the only. And so he caught it last night. Just to remind everybody that he can make these catches.
Oh boy!
Another thing you can't make up about this series, Bob, is that he went and it wasn't obviously the same play, but it was pretty much in the same area of Minute Maid.
I thought I saw the same guy, Mike. I think I don't know.
How funny was it? Looking
and they backed
at those pictures
off
of the fans backing off last night. This is the Friday morning edition of the Sports Reporters. It is Mr. Ryan and myself, Bob. Again, there's so much to unpack in this series, but we have to start with the one significant player, offensive player acquisition who has now become the right-handed Ortiz, and that is J.D. Martinez. Bob, there were so many important swings of the bat. Obviously, Jackie Bradley Jr. richly deserved his MVP award for this series, but I believe that in this postseason, if you look at it as a whole piece, the home run that J.D. Martinez hit in the first inning against the Yankees was huge, and getting them ahead a run last night with his home run off of Verlander. And Bob, in game, A.J. Hinch, who I think is one of the best people in baseball, said something that was so prescient and so right on about games like this. When I'm paraphrasing what he said, the anxiety of being behind in an elimination game, even though it was one run, it was huge.
Well, that's interesting, particularly coming from a team that, this is a defending champion. And, but you'd think that they would be able to master all situations. But, it's interesting. I agree with you on the importance of those two home runs. And I remember thinking, because I was not able to attend game one of the ALDS, when I heard that J.D. had hit a three-run homer, it was just a validation, if you will, or a reminder of the season that he had, and how important he was. And he led the baseball in three-run homers. That's how you get 130 ribbies. And there was a three-run homer. That was his signature swing that really it was three-run homer. Now, very, very, very important hit there. And the other thing, when the other, Devers, here's a kid who's not yet 22. He's got is starting to compile a postseason resume, and he could turn out to be a very, very important player.
Bob, he's going to win a batting championship someday. He's a baby, and I'm not meaning that in any pejorative way. He's a child, okay, yeah, of this sport. They put up where he is with postseason RBI for somebody who has not yet achieved his 22nd birthday. The ball just explodes off his bat. Bob, when he hit that ball, when you saw it in real time come off his bat, you thought that was a fly ball to left field last night.
Yeah.
And the ball keeps going and going and going.
He got on top of that fastball. And, of course, remember, he's already got a home run that everybody in baseball knows and gets referenced every time he comes, plays, which is, of course, the home run off of Chapman last year. Taking him the opposite way on a 101 mile an hour pitch. Now he's interesting, and he's still a work in progress in the field. He's not reliable, 100% reliable. But they gotta go with him now. There's no way you take that bat out of the lineup.
And let's talk about Martinez again. Buck Showalter has a great line about that people who don't play or manage in the American League East, he said, have no idea what a grind the batting orders are with the top teams, okay? Mm-hmm. And he says, all you're looking to do is, as he says, extend the grind, okay? J.D. Martinez expanded the grind. I've come around now. Betts is going to be the MVP. He's got a ton of Willie Mays in his game. But Martinez has changed everything for the guys hitting after him. He has changed everything for the guys who are hitting before him. And Bob, he's quietly, because he has these two home runs. He's quietly got 10 hits so far in the postseason. He's quietly hitting .313. And boy, when he's got a chance to get a run home, he gets a run home. But yeah, he's not ashamed, Robert. Here's the difference between him and the boppers on the Yankees. He's not ashamed to take a single.
Oh, no, not at all. No, that's how you, that's how you, as you said, you that and 3-1 homers, and you accumulate some ribbies. Now the story, it's been told and retold, but you just stop and take a deep breath and say, this guy was released.
DFA'd 4.5 years ago. Bob, I started writing about him. Where we are in Florida, we're close to where the Astros play spring training baseball. So I kind of really locked into this. And Jeff Luhnow is such a smart, great baseball man. And the point of this is, even the smartest people can just miss this. And for people who don't know, Bo Porter was managing the Astros in the spring of 2014. J.D. Martinez could not even get on the field. He only had 18 spring training at-bats. And he's on his way to AAA. And Luhnow has told the story, and I've told it on the podcast before. He sent out a missive to all the other teams in baseball saying he really liked him as a kid, and that J.D. Martinez was available for little or no compensation. Crickets, okay? Yep. And the only person who finally took a flyer on him was Al Avila because, Robert, we've talked about this, he remembered when J.D. had played college baseball at Southwest Nova Fort Lauderdale, yeah, and they gave him a chance, and the rest is history. And now, because this happens in sports sometimes, he comes back and makes a huge swing on the night when the Astros are no longer going to be baseball, the champions of the world.
Before we wrap up on these guys and look to tonight's game, Joe West, this is an amazing resume. Joe West was the umpire who ruled Dave Roberts safe in 2004. He's the umpire who ruled Mark Bellhorn had indeed hit a home run to win game one of the 2004 World Series. He's the umpire who called slapping the glove of A-Rod on Bronson Arroyo, and then he made the call the other night on this
and
home
you
run.
Know what he listen,
entwined in Red Sox history is he.
And Bob, everybody who is around this sport knows that Joe West can be a gigantic pain in the ass, okay? And I don't know if you saw the transcript of the pool reporter's Q&A with him the other night. Let's just say it was terse and tense, okay? But, when he had the plate, they went back and looked at it, and what, he missed one ball strike call, according to, how they analyze these things. And to his credit, He made a decisive call immediately on the ball that Altuve hit. And again, if he calls it the other way, it's a different game. But here's why I have no sympathy for the Astros in this particular area. And that call will be debated and vociferously, especially in Houston, Texas, forever. The Astros did come back and get the lead in that game. Okay, it's not like they were behind and stayed behind. They got the lead, and they couldn't hold it. And James threw a fat pitch to Jackie Bradley Jr., and he knew what to do with it. No. And then, but Bob, I want to go back to Kimbrel for a second, okay? Because who would have thought, after the meltdown that he had at Yankee Stadium, that not only would he close out the last last two games of the American League Championship Series, he would get a total of 9 outs to do it, okay?
Yeah, no, but...
And Bob, we know this. Everything is different, and we may be going back to Boston for Game 6 if Mookie Betts doesn't make the play that you've already described on Tony Kemp, which is just, you can watch it as many times as you want. Bob, I don't even know how he picked out second base. I don't even know how he picked out his target, and then he throws a P to Bogarts to get Kemp.
It's an extraordinary play, and I'm sure every right fielder in baseball was just, as he's watched it, was sitting there with his mouth open. And and of course, we had a great right fielder here, won 8 Gold Gloves, Dwight Evans, and he used to make some plays, but like very similar, but this in the moment and everything and that was attached to it is as great a play as of this type. You know, there's all different types of plays. This is as great a play of this type as you're ever going to see. You cannot. And considering who the base runner was, I mean, this is a the funny thing, as I said, they were friends. They grew up together playing baseball together. And as a matter of fact, Mookie Betts decided he didn't want to take a Vanderbilt offer because he didn't want to play behind Tony Betts. How's that? And that's a fact. If anybody in the world knew how good Mookie Betts is, you might say to yourself, it's Tony Kemp.
Bob, but the other thing about this, and I have been saying this, and I know I think you agree with me, can you think of a better defense, better and more athletic defensive outfield, not just in baseball? I cannot remember any outfield that I would say is better than Benintendi, Bradley, and Betts, the Killer Bees.
No, I'm very biased in that regard here. And we defensively, I've been saying I cannot vouch for every one of the major league outfields right now, but I can say I can't imagine that there's a better one.
How many games did you see? Bob's a season ticket holder at Fenway Park.
25.
How many games? Yeah, okay. And so
and in
you
person.
Saw it. Yeah, you saw it day after day and game after game.
Who was it? David Price said we have 3 center fielders. Chris Sale said, in reference to Bradley, who I hope finally gets his well-deserved gold glove this year, that it's like we have 4 outfielders. He was referring to having Bradley in center. And Benintendi is a perfectly capable center fielder, and he's a terrific left fielder. Betts is a 2-time gold glove guy who, according to the defensive metric, has saved more runs than anybody in baseball or in right field, at least this year. When I'm very dubious of the defensive metrics. I'm throwing it out there. I only need the eye test. It's because to me, that's the only valid defensive measurement is the eye test. There's an outfield that was once in Montreal, Canada, some years ago. They had an outfield that included. It's going to come back to me, and I'm going.
Larry Walker, Dawson,
no,
right?
Predates that. Okay. Come on. They had an outfield there with arms, and we're going to get it. And that outfield was. I want to pay some historical justice to them, but right now, it's hard for me to imagine that there's a better defensive outfield than the Boston Red Sox are privileged to have right now.
Before we move on, and we will move on, I promise, but this has become such an interesting and compelling and evolving story. Okay, if you don't think defense still matters, and if you don't think that the moment doesn't matter in baseball, let me tell you, these 3 outfielders that we're talking about for the Boston Red Sox, okay, who were such dominant figures in this series. Mookie Betts hit .217. Andrew Benintendi hit .208. Jackie Bradley Jr., the MVP of the series, hit .200. Okay? And I got one other question for you. For all of this happy, you know what, about openers now and how starting pitchers don't matter. And we'll use this as a transition, Bob, into the other series. How important have starting pitchers been to the Dodgers and the Red Sox over the last 48 hours?
Yep.
Kershaw and David Price.
Yep.
Okay.
And
so I don't want to hear that starters don't matter anymore, because they sure do, especially at this time of year.
Well, that's, you know, things get of the moment in all sports, you know, and you go through phases and fads, and it's funny, this whole pitching thing, we'll see how it evolves. And, you know, we know that at the start of the season, when we heard what the Rays were planning on doing, everybody rolled their eyes. I know I did. And it turned out that, you know, they were able to do it, to win 90 games, and got you were on top of that one all year.
All right, let's talk about the Brewers.
Things are never 100% true. You know, there's always room. And I'm glad. I'm a traditionalist. I'm glad to see, you know, while we're waxing rhapsodic about that David Price, the fact is it was a six-inning outing. But that's where we are. I remember.
One hit.
This is where we are. How far we come in 1995. Tom
and by
Glavine
the way,
a fantastic
by the way,
game
Robert,
six to win.
I talked to Glavine about that.
He didn't pitch a complete game.
In,
he pitched
real
eight
time
beautiful
that
innings,
night,
not nine.
I thought Bobby Cox had lost his freaking mind, that he was going to take Tom Glavine out, and I wonder. We will never know what would have happened. Okay, if he'd had a no hitter going. Okay, and I said to Glavine, I thought your manager lost your mind. And Glavine looked at me. It was one night at Citi Field, and he said, I had nothing left. and they brought in Mark Wohlers, and they won the World Series. All right, Bob, when you look at the Brewers and the Dodgers, and again, we are having this conversation, obviously, on the eve of Game 6 in Milwaukee, okay? And I think it is going to be an extraordinary atmosphere at Miller on Friday night, okay? Bob, how do you feel? And I think Craig Counsell was one of the best managers in baseball. How do you feel about what
roof,
he did the other day, which was, and I'm not talking about the letter of the law, or the spirit of the law, and there are no rules when you're trying to win a game, okay? But how do you feel about him sending his starting pitcher out there for five pitches and clearly, to force a manager with a very deep team into making some decisions about his batting order?
I'm going to say, go for it. As long as your pitcher's okay with it and understands exactly what's going on, I don't know. All's fair in love and war. I don't know. I didn't have a major problem with it. In the old days, you know, they used to talk about guys where they had a different pitcher warming up under the stands and surprising guys. And I remember growing up reading about stuff like that. If it ever really happened, I don't know. But I'm not – I thought it was –
You love baseball. I love baseball. Bob Ryan
is
the man who came up with one of my favorite expressions of all time about all this lefty-righty matchup. He called it creeping LaRussaism, okay? Now, creeping LaRussaism, and I really like Tony, so this is not anything critical of Tony. LaRussa is one of the great baseball managers of all time. Bob, this genie is out of the bottle, okay? And I just want to know how you feel as you watch the growing obsession with relief pitchers and the constant parade, you know, the 7-8 pitcher games, especially at this time of year. So great.
Oh, I am indeed proud of having coined creeping LaRussaism many, many years ago. And I too want to admire him on certain levels, but I think he's had the most negative effect on baseball watching of anyone in the last 30 years. And it all began in 19 when he made Eckersley a three out, no face, no runners on base, one inning closer. And you know, we had little hints of bullpen, you know, stuff. I mean, we can go on and on.
Right.
I'd love to talk about this. Sparky Anderson actually may have
because he didn't have great starters. It started there.
His pitching staff and the big red machine. But anyway, I don't like it. No, and he didn't. I mean, you know, but they were he was Captain Hook, if you remember. And that was his nickname, Captain Hook, because he had this quality bullpen that year. You know, I don't want to go too off the rails here, but back to LaRussa. No, I agree. I don't like it. I like to see complete games. I like to see traditional patterns. And it just yeah, it's
all right.
It makes the games long. It makes the games tedious. Absolutely, there's no question about it. And also, if this is the way it's going to be, how are they going to? It's interesting. As I think someone pointed out. I think the three is highest paid people in baseball.
Somebody's
going to
make a mistake.
Right,
by the
now,
way, I right? love Clayton Kershaw. If he opts out of his contract and becomes a free agent, this is my opinion. Somebody's going to make a big money mistake on him.
Oh, no question.
Can you think of a team?
In a sane world, if he wants to opt out and somebody wants to give him a 2-year contract, but you know, he's going to be looking for. Oh no, absolutely. It's so evident that he's. I don't mean he's no good anymore, but he's not that guy anymore. He's never going to be that guy again, right? He's a damn good pitcher, but he's not that guy.
Starting pitching, and guess what, Robert, they could be about to make, and even though Kershaw is not as old, Johnson mistake with Clayton Kershaw, okay, and get him on the back nine. And all right, let's talk about the Brewers for a second, okay? All right, because one thing we have seen in this series, and I am not declaring it over, and we could have a good laugh about this on Monday, okay? The Dodgers come at you at a blue wave. They got left-handed hitters. They got right-handed hitters. They got guys who would be starting in a lot of teams coming off the bench. But Robert, Christian Yelich is hitting 150 in this series. Okay, he is hitting 150 in this series, and you know, Moustakas is hitting 095, and they've got to remember how to hit when they get to Miller Park, or the Dodgers will have come back to win this series the way they came back in the National League West this year.
Yeah, I mean, there's no great mystery here. That they have to start scoring, and they're not. They haven't been doing it, and you know, maybe finally the carriage is going to turn into a pumpkin for them after all in the end. And the Dodgers, who were the team with the payroll, who expected to be where they are, who had to start off, you know, who had to dig themselves out of a hole, all that's, you know, forgotten. And now here they are with the on the verge of going where they always assumed they would go. And, you know, maybe the pedigree, whatever word you want to call it, the class, the cream rising to the top, all the cliches, all the references.
All right, Bob.
Maybe that's what we're seeing.
And I don't know the answer.
You know,
but
I'd like to go for a seventh game. Okay, I hope
talking about
the
Dodger journey to this moment, not knowing if they're going to make it back to the World Series, not knowing if they're going to get out of Milwaukee with their season. I will bet you that there haven't been many teams and may not have ever been another team that came back to make the World Series after being 9 games under 500 at one point during the regular season. And that is where the Dodgers were. And they have done a masterful job of becoming a complete team. Dave Roberts, I'm as much a Dave Roberts fanboy, even though I think he can overuse his bullpen too, okay, as I am an Alex Cora fanboy. And he has done a splendid job with this baseball team.
Yeah, well, we're both members of that Dave Roberts personal fan club, no question.
right.
The first one that comes to mind, Mike, is the 1914 Miracle Braves, who were in last place on July 4th, albeit not too far out. I don't know what their record was. Our crack research staff
and
is working on
Justin
it. But other than that, I don't know how many other too many other possibilities there would be.
Looked at him when he was with the Mets and said, "Oh my God, this is a future Mr. October." But that swing he made last weekend may have turned this whole thing around for the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Oh, very, very, very big swing. Very, very important. And I mean, that's out, you know, he's become a kind of a folk hero of sorts with regard to this clutch ability. And I don't have an, you know, explanation how these things happen. Historically, the guys do suddenly blossom elsewhere from some their original places. Nobody has an answer.
All right, let me ask you a question.
But
about
he certainly
a guy
is
who's hitting .316,
a prime time
playoffs,
player right now. That's for sure.
Just quietly going about his business, a free agent to be shortstop named Manny Machado. Bob, if you are a general manager with a need, would you be willing to invest as much as $300 million on this young man, and knowing all in the good and the bad of his game.
No, I just, I know how, the answer is no. He does bother me. The problem being, he obviously is not willing to concede any wrongdoing. We know he's a chronic non-runner outer, I don't know. I just don't think I want him around. I don't know. Am I wrong?
Yeah, no, and I was the reaction that the Brewers had when he stepped on Aguilar the other day at first base stepped on him, basically kicked at him, okay, was so immense. I mean, Yelich, a dirty play by a dirty player, it will come as no shock to fans of the team we have spent about a half hour talking about today, the Boston Red Sox.
By the way, Mike, I have the answer to your question.
You do?
Yes, I do.
Our team of analyticians or whatever they are came up with it?
On July 6th, 1914.
Yeah.
On July 4th. On the 4th of July, the Boston Braves were 26-40-4-0-1 tie. And they went from that 14 under 500 to win the World Series in four games over the
Philadelphia unusual.
Athletics.
So if it hasn't happened maybe it has happened in
104 years, Mike.
It's extremely rare the way the Dodgers, and you know, the thing about the Dodgers is, yes, they have a lot of talent, okay? There's a lot of talent. They have spent a lot of money on baseball players. But Bob, I wrote a column about this about a month ago. The Dodger Blue has become a blue collar team. They have a very blue collar approach to playing baseball.
You know, it's their interest. They have a lot of guys that can hurt you, and funny, they have don't even have a 90 ribby guy, and they hit all these 200 plus home runs. It just spread out through so many people, and of course, this gives me. You're just throwing me the. The Tim Wakefield 68 mile an hour 3-0 get it over fastball.
Yeah.
How can you not have a soft spot in your heart for a team that employs a fellow named Max Muncy?
He's been your favorite player in the National League all year. But Bob, I'll tell you something else about Dave Roberts. He has obviously gotten through to Puig. Okay. Puig is hitting 300 for the postseason and hasn't thrown a tantrum or a hissy fit about having to many times to come off the bench.
Can you imagine what it must have been like so many times in the inner sanctum of the Los Angeles Dodgers since that young man made his first appearance in the bigs, and how many discussions and how many, what are we going to do with them? And can we get through to them? And oh my God. And the angst that he's put them through, and the thing is, you asked about, would you want the whole Machado package and for 300 mil, but just the whole Puig package. Sometimes I'm sure there were times they said, that's enough, and they have sent him down, right? He's been down.
Right.
But he is extraordinarily talented. You want that channeled in the right way, but he too doesn't always run everything out. But boy, did you see him run on that one the other day that he took when he came out? He got out of the box. This shows you what's available to the talent he can tap into when he just chooses to, honor us with it. And that's what must completely drive them crazy, because there goes a potential MVP player if he ever harnessed it all.
And Robert, have you ever seen a more effortless bat break over the knee than Mr. Puig has provided in this? I mean, he looked like he was bending a swizzle stick. I mean, it snapped like a twig.
It's like the famous time here many years ago when Jim Rice, the bat broke in his hands, and he's fun. I mean, he gets your attention on the ball field. Let's put it that way.
Who do you think the television networks are rooting for this weekend in Milwaukee, Bob? Do you think they'd like the Dodgers and the Red Sox?
Or
the Red Sox and the Brew Crew? Which one do you think television wants to do?
Oh, God. I always go back to, you know, because I don't give a damn. But I just want the best teams there. But, I understand. I always remember there was a time in the late I think we've talked about this before. A time in the late 90s when there was a very strong possibility of an NBA Finals, Indiana and Utah. And I could just see everyone lining up on the top of the Olympic Tower. You know, am I going head first or feet first? Right? Anyway, that's their problem. I just want the best teams that should be there. I don't give a damn. But you're right. God. That could be, you know, a dream scenario. It would be a dream scenario.
All right. We've got some interesting pro football games to talk about coming up on Sunday. But, Bob, you, as everybody knows who listens to us or watches us on TV, Mr. Ryan is a member of the Basketball Hall of Fame. And you found the changing of the guard and the rule about kids this week to be very interesting.
Well, there's a story out now. They're proposing to offer a contract to select people in the G League to induce them, you know, if they want to leave college. $125,000 as opposed to whatever the standard is now, probably about 50, you know, God knows what. The idea of making it a stronger inducement for someone to forego his college eligibility and go, you know, but without going directly to the NBA, but going to the G League, will $125,000 be enough of a, whoa, I got to have that, to persuade someone to give up that sophomore year or go directly to out of high school? I don't know. It may be. I mean, you know, when you think about the pathology of so many of the young men and the backgrounds that they come from, and that sounds like a whole hell of a lot of money to somebody. And I don't know if that's going to do it, but it's interesting to contemplate.
It's interesting, Bob, that of the three major sports, and I'm not meaning to be dismissive at all of the NHL, that there is no viable at this point minor league feeding system in football and in basketball the way there is in baseball. And this would, I mean, it would be a form of that. And the question is, will these, quote, select prospects look at the money and say, okay, well, wait a minute, I can play college basketball for one more year and enhance my value, or I can make $125,000 that I wasn't going to make going to, you know, English class to begin getting myself ready. And it'll Bob, how do you convince these kids that they can be big fancy pants lottery picks taking that route?
Well, only when someone does it. Yeah, that's a good point. Only when someone does. But the thing is, I don't know how it's going to work in terms of the fact that if you're bypassing the draft, then, you know, you're not being drafted. I don't know how it's going to work. I haven't seen the workings. That's a very good point. I hadn't thought about it in that context at all. I mean, are they going? How are they going to be chosen? You're not going to be signing if you're bypassing the draft at all. That's a good question. I don't know how it's going to work. That's a very good question. Hey, before we exit this topic, I just want to ask you what you think about an allied thing in another sport, but in the same level of the sport, Nick Bosa.
Oh man! What would you do if you were Nick Bosa?
Do you
think you're going to see him? That's it, right?
Yeah, that's it for him. Apparently, that is it. He's not going to play any more college football. He is going to go directly to he's not pass and go collecting the $200. He's going right to the combine or wherever. Yeah,
we've been talking about something we've been moving towards, Bob. We have been moving with kids skipping bowl games. Okay,
was it Leonard Fournette? Was he the first? The prominent one that want to play in a crappy bowl game?
You know, I mean, it's we have been moving in. It's like as inevitable as the tide. We have been moving in that direction. Okay, let's talk about. All right, which games do you find interesting?
I think I'm still intrigued with Kansas City because I think Kansas City Cincinnati obviously was flexed to the night for a reason. Everybody wants to see Kansas City. I'm one of them, and. I repeat what I said on Monday and Monday morning sports reporters is that there were two winners in Foxborough last week. Right, I mean, the Patriots won on the scoreboard in a game they desperately needed to keep their situation alive in terms of future seeding in January and all that. But Kansas City came away saying, we can play with these guys. And his the quarterback didn't have a great first half, but he had a damn incredible second half. And I think that they feel empowered after that game with the Patriots, despite the fact they got beat 43-40 on a field goal with no time left. I think that's – and Cincinnati has been, you know, kind of quietly hanging around, and they're 4-2. This is a game I think is an interesting game.
Bob, I don't have to cover Bill Belichick, okay? And I've known Bill Belichick since he was Bill Parcells' top sergeant with the Giants of the 1980s, okay? So I know that – talk about extending the grind. This has been an extended grind if you have to cover Mr. Belichick, okay? I like him. And how about the incredibly human reaction he gave this week? The Patriots are playing the Bears on the road this week, and he was asked about Khalil Mack and a comparison to Lawrence Taylor. And basically, Mr. Belichick said, whoa, 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 whoa. We're talking about Lawrence Taylor here. If there's Lawrence Taylor, because I've compared Mac to Lawrence Taylor, and I saw Lawrence at his best. But Bob, wasn't that a great reaction?
Yes, it was. And you know, here's what it did for me. It was yet another log on a certain fire that's built, which is this: when he went back to Giant Stadium, was it last year or the year before? And he rhapsodized, and he was pointing out to people, this is the room where we did this, and this is where he's going, of course, when it was Giant Stadium, I'm not talking about the current, but whenever the year he went back, and his eyes light up when he talks about the Giants experience. And I swear his heart is as much implanted forever in New York as it is in Foxborough. I really believe that.
Bob, you know, it's funny. Several years ago, when it was the Broncos playing a Super Bowl where the Seahawks, you know, crushed them in New Jersey. Okay, the first and only New Jersey Super Bowl. I called up Stacey James at the Patriots. And I've known Bill a long time. And I said, listen, I don't want him to handicap the game. I said, I just want him to talk about Peyton Manning, because everybody used to talk about Brady versus Manning. And I said, no, that wasn't the rivalry. The rivalry was Belichick versus Manning. And Bob, somewhere I've got this notebook, okay? Mm-hmm. And for 45 minutes, all of the football in him came out. And he was talking about cadences. And Mike, you'd see him. I'd watch tape, and here he is against the Broncos 3 weeks ago. And same play, same formation, same everything, completely different cadence. And it was like that kind of deep inside football. No. When you can get him going, okay, and the football boy in him, the son of the coach in him comes out, He is as interesting. Bob, in 45 minutes, I think I asked him like four questions.
Mike, are you aware that there is forthcoming, the publication date's November 6th, a book that is doing exactly what we're talking about? My colleague for many years, and as good a writer, a pure writer as I think the Boston Globe has ever had anywhere in its pages, John Powers, has written a book, which is Fridays with Bill. And as I've been personally telling people for years, the world only sees him at his worst, which is on Sunday. And then he's not too much better other days. But by Friday, if you stick around and come to the press conference on Friday, when the hay's in the barn, the game plan's there, it's just a walkthrough, and he is ready to talk football and talk football and talk football and ask him the right questions, which means anything other than how's the injury to so-and-so and, you know, anything to do with the plan, anything to do with football, whether it's history where he has to be.
Oh, I had no idea that this was being done. Is it? Oh, no,
knowledgeable
kidding.
Coach in the history of football and historically. Yeah. It's coming. I have received the book and I'm envious. I'm sick with envy because he beat me to it. I sat on my fat butt and never did a thing about that, what I knew was a good idea. And John Powers went out and did it and got the transcripts.
And Bill gave him access.
He got these are just transcripts. This is what he's been talking about in these Friday sessions for 17 years in Boston, in Foxborough. Oh, and it's as you said, Mike, it's anecdotal. It's all over the place. He is tremendous. He's a raconteur on Friday, and then he goes back and, you know, becomes Mr. Monotone by Sunday.
All right. Let's a couple other games that I think are interesting. Okay. Vikings at Jets, Bob, to me, is an interesting game.
Well, the high-flying, high-scoring Jets.
But, Bob, the young quarterback that they drafted because they were spurned by Kirk Cousins, they play Mr. Cousins on Sunday. Mm. And Darnold is coming off a very good game. And I don't – there has been nothing that I have seen from him so far to indicate that the Jets did anything other than the right thing by drafting him. Obviously, Baker Mayfield is off the board. I actually don't know what would have happened if Baker Mayfield, but both of them had been on the board at that time, whether they would have gone with Baker Mayfield. But there's nothing not to like, even with the mistakes he's made, what we've seen from Mr. Darnold through the first six games.
No, I'm sure and people have a right to be excited, and I'm looking forward to see how he fares when we got the two games left with the Patriots for him, and see how that goes, and as he goes into the, you know, the Bill Belichick roster of rookie quarterbacks that he, and see how he does. No question. No, that's good. Definitely, there's some hope. There's some little light in the tunnel for the Jet fans, thanks to Darnold, I think. No question. I'll tell you another game that I do think is interesting, Mike, and that is New Orleans at Baltimore.
You bet. I was just going to bring it up, Bobby. Yep.
The irresistible force, immovable object theme right there. Here's one I just learned this morning. I give full credit. I didn't know that until I heard it this morning on television. The Baltimore Ravens have yet to yield a second-half touchdown.
Oh, I know. No, they can play defense again. No,
wow.
This is like, yep. No, this to me is a fascinating game because, you know, after, you know, the Saints should have lost to the Browns. You know, we get all that, okay? But, you know, they're 4-1. They go to 5-1 if they win this game. And they are a force to be reckoned with. And the other game, just to see if we're going to have anything in the NFC East this year, we got an old-fashioned Cowboys-Redskins game in Washington, 4:25 Sunday afternoon.
Yep. No, the East. Mike, I don't know if you know this. I looked it up.
Okay,
somebody has to win it.
Yeah.
No, it's in the bylaws. It's in the bylaws of the NFL Constitution. It says that clearly that no matter how you want to determine it, even if you want to do a coin flip or a arm wrestle, someone has to win the NFC East.
Okay.
Just so you know that.
One quick college football question. Bob, and you know, I know that this sometimes can make your head explode. How much was Notre Dame hurt by nearly losing to Pitt last Saturday?
Anyone else in that category? It might have been fatal or maybe. It's Notre Dame. If Notre Dame runs the table, if that's what we're saying, if they run the table, they're getting in. Don't you think?
All right.
I just got a sleeper game for you. At Clemson at NC State, because people don't know outside of Raleigh is that NC State has yet to have a blemish on its record this year. So
yes.
This is an undefeated, and they're home. You got to give them a puncher's chance. They got a quarterback that the pros are doing the making the goo goo eyes at. His name is Ryan Finley. And he's putting up some boxcar numbers over his career. And so keep an eye on that game. And don't be struck dumb if the Wolfpack prevail.
Well, you know, even passionate Clemson fans that I know are a little sketchy about this year's team. And, Bob, in a couple of weeks, and we will have time to talk about it, do you believe that Alabama-LSU can be an interesting college football game? Or is this another one of those weeks where we say, hey, you know, somebody might give the Tide some trouble this week, and then they win 63-8?
Well, the thing, I just don't know if LSU has anywhere near enough offense still to generate any kind of a threat against the Alabama defense. I mean, I think maybe they'll be posing a threat to Tua and company on defense, but I would find that's still a reach, I think.
By now, if you listen to our podcast, you know that when it comes to shaving and shaving accessories, I'm a Gillette guy. And I'll tell you why I'm a Gillette guy. Because my dad, my 94-year-old war hero dad, was always a Gillette guy. So it was never a question when I started shaving that I was going to be a Gillette guy too. I have three sons. They're all Gillette guys now. And I have no elaborate shaving needs. I want the blade to be good. I want the shaving cream to be good. And I want to shave once a day and be done with it. I have been doing this my whole adult life with Gillette. I have used all of their razors, the Mach 3, the Fusion, the Pro Shield. I love their shaving cream. It has been a part of my daily routine, again, for as long as I can remember. And now here's the good news. Here's the good news. And again, this is an enthusiastic sponsor read on my part, just because of my personal history with this company. You can get Gillette quality blades at the best value and convenience with Gillette On Demand. With Gillette On Demand, you can get blades delivered directly to your door. You don't have to go to the pharmacy. You don't have to do that thing, Bob. You don't have to do the thing where you got to go and they have to unlock the plastic thing so you won't steal the razor. No, you don't have to do any of that. Gillette On Demand. Subscribe to Gillette On Demand today and get 50% off your first order with special offer code SPORTSREPORTERS50 at checkout. Enjoy free shipping and every fourth order will be free with your subscription. Visit Gillette online at GilletteOnDemand.com and use SPORTSREPORTERS50 for 50% off your first order. On to our parting shots, and today I will go first with one more baseball thought. We knew Alex Cora was going to be a manager someday when he came to New York and played with the Mets for a couple of seasons. And even when he didn't play, you always made sure to stop by his locker to get his analysis of the game that had just been played. And anybody who spent 5 minutes with Cora during his 4 years as a Red Sox player knew the exact same thing. Across parts of 14 seasons in the big leagues, Alex Cora was always one of the smartest guys in the room. And right now in baseball, he looks like the smartest guy in the room. We've talked a lot about the reasons why today, but you can start and end here one more time. He didn't give up on Jackie Bradley Jr. early when he couldn't hit 200. He did not give up on David Price and Craig Kimbrel late. And now Cora, who was a rookie ball player just 20 years ago, is now a rookie manager in the World Series. And across this season, one in which the Red Sox have now won 115 baseball games, here's what happened. The whole baseball world found out what we always knew standing in front of his locker.
You know, Mike, we're nearing the halfway point in the NFL season. And guess what has not been in the news? Dun, 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 dun. That's right. Well, that's probably because our POTUS has been preoccupied with somewhat more relevant business of state. Now, anyway, I really hope all this nonsense is behind us. What Colin Kaepernick did was never about the flag or the military, and it fell well within his constitutional rights to protest peacefully. Of course, the biggest loose end of all is that Colin Kaepernick, a competent professional quarterback, is still without a job and, I presume, is likely to remain that way. What he is now is part of history. He will be regarded as a champion of liberty by some and a threat to our well-being by others. The only question left is who plays him in the movie. Well, that'll do it for the Friday edition of the Sports Reporters. Mike Lupica and myself, Bob Ryan, will be welcoming back our colleague Mitch Albom next week. Mike, I just love this time of year. Just love it.
Oh, my God.
I love this time of year. There's so much going on.
We didn't even talk about the NBA. Bobby, we didn't even get to, there's
didn't
so
even
much
get
going
to the NBA. Well, the fledgling NBA. Yes, LeBron
game.
Lost his opener, folks. But, you know, there's 81 to go. I think he'll bounce back. Anyway, we will talk to you again on Monday. We hope that everybody in America someday wakes up in a city that is as giddily happy as the one I do in the 21st century. So long, everybody.